Chapter 16. Silence. Days after the battle, the silence was still deafening. Yet there was safety in that silence, the very antithesis of the eye and the battle we had fought to break out of it. We hid deep in the true void, the vengeful spirit and the Thane drifting together in the space between the stars, surrounded by a significantly diminished flotilla of escorts, light cruisers, and captured Black Templar's frigates. Soon we would need to reunify our scattered fleet, but for now we drifted in hidden serenity at one of the prearranged muster points, preparing for the coming war. I stood with Naguel, distractedly running my hands through the demon's fur. I listened as my lord spoke of the future.
"This is an opportunity like no other," Abaddon said to me.
His voice crackled from the speaker vanes at the sides of his Medicaid tank. He floated in suspension fluid similar in both shade and bloodstained taint to the amniotic fluid within Ultio's life support cradle. The three of us were alone. This deck's apothecarian was empty upon pain of death. A squad of the Aphotic Blade stood guard outside, and only the Ezekarian were permitted to enter. Of the Ezekarian, only Amuriel and Iliaster were permitted within to tend to our lord's wounds. A rebreather mask bound to his face supplied oxygen and conveyed his words. He was stripped of his armor plating, his pale bulk in the murky fluid somehow reminiscent of a necromantic experiment. The scar began at his cheek, then thickened as it descended to his collarbone, ending at the ruination of his chest. Sigismund had struck true, destroying several of my lord's internal organs, necessitating their cloned regrowth. I had offered to heal him with my biomantic manipulation. "I can encourage the flesh to regrow," I pointed out. It was unreliable, but no more so than cloning. He had refused. It was, he stated, a matter of trust. By relying on Iliaster's cloning ministrations, he proved the depths of his trust in Iliaster. "Cloned organs are vulnerable to cancerous growths," I pointed out to no avail. Cancer was, after all, nothing more complex than natural cell replication gone awry, and adding artifice to the process only heightened the risks. But Abaddon's mind was made up. As he floated in the tank, naked of armour and dressed only in a plethora of old scars, that age-old suspicion resurfaced amidst my thoughts. He had always been huge for one of our kind, and had always possessed his Primarch's features in the way many of the former sons of Horus tended to do. It was common knowledge, even during the Great Crusade, that no space marine took after their Primarch as obviously as Ezekiel Abaddon took after the War Master. But seeing him, stripped of battleplate and pretension alike, the similarity between dead father and living son was nothing short of revelatory. I finally gave voice to a question many had considered, yet none had dared ask. "Are you Horus?" His golden eyes glinted with amusement. He dragged in a slow breath through his rebreather.
"I am Ezekiel Abaddon," he said through the Medicaid's tank speakers.
"That is not what I meant." I shook my head and gestured to him. This immense figure in the suspension tank, with slabs of muscle over muscle and a demigod-like stature that had led to this legend being whispered throughout the Nine Legions. A legend that would one day be whispered across the galaxy. "Are you Horus? Are you his clone? His son?" He laughed, the sound wet and tinny over the speakers.
"What do you believe, Kaon? Do you think I am?"
I saw no reason to lie. "Yes." This delighted him. I was not sure why.
"And if I were, brother? If I were merely Horus remade, recrafted, with a twist in my gene code here and an alteration there, would it change anything?"
I had to think about that. I looked into his eyes but saw no answers there, only amusement.
"Well, perhaps. Perhaps you have always been a genetic twin of your Primarch. Or perhaps Ezekiel Abaddon was slain in his pilgrimage across the Eye, and you were one of Fabius's creations in his place.
How am I to know?" This too delighted him.
So yet again, we come back to trust, my brother.
So it seems.
Let me ask you this, Kaon.
What does it matter?
Clones, sons, fathers. Let the herd whisper whatever truths they choose. Our eyes are set on worthier goals. We look to the future, not the past.
I acceded with a nod, knowing that there was no answer to be had here, knowing ultimately that he was right. It did not matter. At least, not if he was on our side.
You spoke of an opportunity, I prompted. You did the right thing, he countered.
I flinched, taken by surprise.
You were right to scatter the fleet, brother.
I know, but it's gratifying nevertheless to hear you agree with my actions.
And you slaughtered Tagus Derevik. Did I not tell you that you could?
He shifted in the suspension fluid, his eyes wild and bright.
And was it not, as ever, a matter of vindicta?
It was, I conceded.
Between our freedom and Daravik's death,
he began, and his gaze turned fierce, shining with ambition.
Opportunity dawns like never before. The Templars will return, and they won't be alone. They'll bring the wrath of the Imperium at their backs. And what will they find?
Is this question rhetorical?
Humour me, my assassin, humour me.
They will find worlds aflame, outposts destroyed, fleet yards raided, shipping lanes plundered.
All true. But they will find raiders and reavers performing those acts, scattered warbands and isolated warlords, not an army. Not the Nine Legions.
I saw where he was leading now.
And with Daravek dead, there has never been a finer time to unify the Legions in the hatred we share. Once we have unified the Black Fleet, we will bring the warbands of the other Legions to heel through temporary alliances and offers of mutual warfare. Some will betray us. Some will reject us. But we need unity now, Kaon. Let us rise above petty piracy and wage open war once more.
It sounded grand, and it was the perfect truth, but it was not the truth entire. A silken thread, too fine for an unaugmented human eye to make out, lay on the deck. It was approximately a metre long, the shade of a dead tree under an overcast sky. A hair. A hair to match the faint scent of Abaddon's previous visitor. I wondered how long ago Morriana had been here. I did not need to wonder what she had said.
Open war in the segmentum, I dared to say, will also serve your other purpose.
It was not a question, nor did he insult me by feigning ignorance.
Drachnaen calls, Kaon. That weapon will be mine.
Nefertari had protected Morriana throughout the boarding actions. I would in time come to regret giving her that order, and regret how well she had obeyed it. But I did not yet know what a curse the blade would become, nor the madnesses that its black spirit would whisper into all of our minds. Even if I had known then, would I have argued? Abaddon would never have listened. Ambition is ever his closest brother. Closer even than the Ezakarian. Tell me something, I said, before I leave.
Speak.
Sigismund, how did he wound you? Abaddon fell silent, the vicious vitality of ambition bleeding away. The black rebreather covered much of his face, and the murk occluded some of his expression. But I believe for the very first time I saw something like shame flicker across my lord's face. How curious.
He wouldn't die,
Abaddon said at last, thoughtful and low.
He just wouldn't die.
I did not need to skim his mind for insight. Just from his tone I knew what had happened.
He baited you.
You were lost to rage. I saw the muscles of Abaddon's jaw and throat clench as he ground his teeth.
It was over before I knew he had struck me. I couldn't breathe. I felt no pain, but I couldn't breathe. The black sword was buried to the hilt, like the old man had sheathed it inside my chest.
Ezekiel's voice was soft across the speakers, cushioned by the bitterness and fascination of reflection. His words were almost staccato whispers, each one a drop of acid on bare flesh.
The only way to kill me was to welcome his own death, and he did it the moment the chance arose.
We were face to face, like that, with his blade through my body. My armor sparked. It failed. I lashed back. His blood soaked the talon. He fell. I remained quiet, letting Abaddon's tale unspool. His eyes were looking through me, not seeing what was, but what had been.
He wasn't dead, Kael. He was on the floor, sprawled like a corpse, disemboweled and torn in two, but he still lived. I was on my knees, forcing my dead lungs to keep breathing, kneeling over him like an apothecary. The black sword was still through me. Our eyes met. He spoke.
I did not ask Abaddon to tell me. I reached into his thoughts then, tentatively at first, in case he rebuffed my presence. Then I closed my eyes and saw. The Black Knight, fallen and ripped apart, his sword brethren gone or dead, I did not know which. Red staining Sigismund's tabard, red decorating the deck beneath and around him, red in Abaddon's eyes, misting his sight. Blood. So much blood. Here, at the last, he looked every one of his years, with time's lines cracking his face. He looked upwards at the chamber's ornate ceiling, his eyes lifted as if in reverence to the master of mankind upon his throne of gold. Sigismund's hand trembled, still twitching, seeking his fallen sword.
No,
Abaddon murmured with brotherly gentleness, through the running of his blood and the heaving of his chest.
No, it's over. Sleep now, in the failure you have earned.
The knight's fingertips scraped the hilt of his blade, so very close, yet he lacked the strength to move even that far. His face was the bloodless blue of the newly dead, yet still he breathed.
Sigismund, Abaddon said, through lips darkened by his own lifeblood. This claw has killed two Primarchs. It wounded the Emperor unto death. I would have spared it the taste of your life as well. If you could only see what I have seen.
As I stared through Abaddon's eyes, I confess I expected the triteness of some knightly oath, or a final murmur in the Emperor's name. Instead, the ruined thing that had been first captain of the Imperial Fists and High Marshal of the Black Templars spoke through a mouthful of blood, committing the last of his life to biting off each word, ensuring he spoke each one in shivering, sanguine clarity.
You will die as your weakling father died. Soulless, honorless, weeping, ashamed.
Sigismund's last word was also his last breath. It sighed out of his mouth, taking his soul with it. In the apothecarium, I opened my eyes and found I had nothing to say. Words eluded me in the wake of Sigismund's final curse.
Falcus brought Sigismund's body from the Crusader, Abaddon told me. He carried it himself.
Still, I said nothing. Whether he desired it as a trophy, to join Tager Staravec as an articulated skeleton crucified above the oculus, or whether he wanted to desecrate Sigismund's corpse to some divine end, I could not guess. Abaddon looked incomparably weary once more, and I took the quiet as my cue to leave. He did not object.
There is something I must do, I said by way of farewell.
One last thread to cut. He did not answer, nor did he watch as I left. He was seeing Sigismund again, dwelling on replies he could never speak to a brother he had once admired, and who had died despising him. I sensed no sorrow from him as I left. I sensed nothing at all, and that hollowness,
that emptiness was somehow worse. Sargon had gathered a small conclave of warriors within his suite of chambers, and they stood in the candlelit space of his prayer chamber, speaking amongst themselves, awaiting the former word-bearer's chaplain to begin proceedings. I'd asked Sargon to gather them, and to take their sworn oaths in the privacy of his sanctum. If I sent the summons myself, it would have woken their suspicions in ways I wished to avoid. 11 in total. 11 surviving warriors that had witnessed the battle between Abaddon and Sigismund. It should have been 12, but Zaidu was not there. Telemachon had done as he always did, and ensured his favoured lackeys answered to no one but himself. I chose not to let it concern me. I had business enough with these 11 souls. 2 of them were warriors of the Shrieking Masquerade. The rest were from Amuriel's warband, the Flesh Harvest, warriors he had trusted with his life on countless occasions. Sargon bade them remake their oaths of silence, oaths they had already sworn to Telemachon and Amuriel aboard the Thane, murmuring vows never to speak of what they had seen. No one outside those present for the duel itself could be allowed to know that Abaddon had come so close to falling in battle against Sigismund. Such unwelcome truths had no place in the legend we were carving. They all reaffirmed without objection, honoured by the ceremony. Each of them knew that deceit meant death, and that keeping their word meant the Ezakarian would look upon them with favour. This could be a grand opportunity. Leadership of squads, even lieutenant's roles in a warband, were not out of the question. Fate had given them leverage and brought them close to the Ezakarian. They had no desire to squander this opportunity by proving themselves unworthy of it. These were the thoughts I felt from afar. The ambition, the temptation, the hunger. None of them had broken their oaths. They cherished the chance to be loyal. Sargon consecrated them one by one with blood blessings of the Eightfold Path, gently drawn upon their foreheads with a gore-wet thumb. He dipped his fingertips into a bowl of slave viscera and whispered that the Pantheon would look kindly upon each of them for keeping their lord's secret. When Sargon was done, he tipped the bowl to his lips and drank the remaining gore. With care and patience, he placed the empty receptacle down and gestured for the warriors to leave, thanking them once more. They filed through his training room and across the bare metal deck, not yet beginning to speak amongst themselves. Their auras were alight with pride, with the sense of being inducted into secrets that were denied to their brethren. The bulkheads at the north and south of Sargon's armory sealed on grinding tracks, ending with cacophonic bangs of metal on metal. As both doors crashed closed, I stepped from the shadows before the 11 warriors. I did not say anything. The charade was over. Even if I had wanted to speak, there was no time. Several of them realized what was happening at once. The 2 raptors of the Shrieking Masquerade cried their piercing weaponized hunt calls, reaching for chain blades and gunning them to life. In the same moment, 4 of the others went for their bolters and opened fire. The shrieks drifted past me, ignored. The bolts slammed and burst against a kind shield I raised with a gesture of my bionic hand. I did not tell them to surrender and give in to the inevitable. I could have promised them it would be swifter and without pain if they accepted their fate, but I did not wish to lie to them. It was going to hurt whether they submitted or not.
"Hold fire! Hold fire!"
one of them, a squad leader, roared. He battered the others' guns down.
"Lord Kaon,"
he said, and looked at me with the faith of a true believer.
"Lord Kaon, you don't need to do this. We swore an oath. We would never speak of what we saw."
I admired his level-headedness. I did not admire his naivety. Nagual leapt from the darkness, the tigress cat's size and weight bearing the sergeant to the deck and eclipsing him in moving, clawed shadow. Ceramite warped. Blood arced and stank in the air. The remaining 10 warriors moved without unity, shouting and firing and charging and seeking to flee. I hurled them away in every direction, pinning them to the walls with an outburst of telekinetic force, slamming them back against the iron in mimicry of high gravity acceleration. Each attempt to wrench an arm or leg free of their pressurized bindings ended with the limb thudding back into place with magnetic force. Enough. The beast stopped its noisy feasting at once. The sergeant was still alive. He lacked a functioning throat, a chest, and one arm, but he was still alive. The remains of organs pulsed slickly, slowing in the broken shell of his chest.
"Lord,"
he managed to murmur through black, stinking blood. The man's endurance was nothing short of amazing.
"Don't give us to your elder."
I smiled at the man's dying request. I could at least grant his last wish. "You are not traitors," I replied. "You will not suffer a traitor's fate." "Goodbye, Sergeant Havelock."
"Lord."
Sometimes I still wonder what he was going to say. His attempts to speak were cut off by the blackening and swelling of his flesh, by the splitting and shattering of his armor plating, by the unformed words melting into a throaty scream of mutating vocal cords. Feathery wings burst, tattered and bony, from his back. The elongated avian beak that stretched and cracked from his face was stringy with bloody saliva. "Come, Nerguel."
"Master,"
the demon acknowledged, following me at once. I left the chambers with Sargon and my familiar at my side. Once the bulkheads were sealed again, I relaxed my psychic grip on the 10 warriors pressed to the walls. The way they clawed at the hull and the sealed doors was almost musical, the muffled sounds of their captivity. Bolters barked, sounding like distant thunder. Bodies crashed against metal. Legionaries shouted and then fell silent. Something vast cawed loud enough to shake the corridor outside the chamber. But I'd been careful in my preparations. The creature, a ragged, black and raven-like example of its demonic choir, would be weakened at once by the sigils of draining imprinted upon the walls. Its lifespan in the corporeal realm was measured in a matter of heartbeats after its executioner's duty was done. Already, its enraged laughter began to fade as its physical form dissolved. I looked to Sargon. "I apologize for the mess you will find in there." He blinked slowly, uncaring. I doubted he would even allow his slaves to cleanse the chamber. He had no aversion to such decorations in his sanctum. I left him there, left him listening to the Lord of Change dying in banishment, and returned to my other duties. With the Black Legion scattered and weakened, we had to ensure its first crusade was not destined to be its last. Soon, we would bathe Segmentum Obscurus in fire.